Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Mpuga. This evening, we'll talk about one-party rule and democracy in Africa. And tonight, we'll be joined momentarily by my colleague, Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zim Service, otherwise known as Studio 7. Blessing will be joining me in a moment. And also, we're joined by Dr. Christopher Kayumba of the School of Journalism at the National University of Rwanda. Christopher joins us by phone from the Rwandan capital, Kigali. Good evening, Christopher.
Good evening, Douglas.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing? How is Washington, D.C.?
We're doing great, thanks, and good to hear from you once again.
Nice to hear from you, too.
Thank you. And my colleague, Blessing Zulu of Zim Service, VOA Zim Service, right here now. Blessings, once again, welcome to the show.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You're welcome. As I said, our topic tonight is going to be one-party rule and democracy in Africa. A single party or one-party state is a type of state in which a single political party has the right to form the government, usually based on the existing constitution. All other parties are either outlawed or allowed to take only limited and controlled participation in elections. But at times, the term de facto single-party state is used to describe a dominant party system that, unlike the single-party state, allows at least nominally democratic multi-party elections, but the existing practices or balance of power effectively prevent the opposition from winning the elections. Blessings. This is the type, the latter party, the type of one-party rule we're talking about basically here, and we're seeing many of these on the continent. Is it this type of governance, this type of system where one party is so dominant and also makes it almost impossible for other parties to win, is it compatible with democracy as we know it, or what's your take on that?
I think it's not compatible with democracy as we know it. I think it has to be given another name. The elections are not really elections. You know, it's just a ritual that you have to go through, you know, to say after 5 years we are going to have elections. But no elections to talk about. You give the example of Zimbabwe, where during the election campaign, senior securocrats or military leaders will come out and say, you know, even if the opposition wins, we are not going to allow them to rule. So, you know, a lot of intimidation. And I mean, it's caused mostly by parties that would have fought liberation war parties in Zimbabwe. You have the Zimbabwe African National Union, which is ZANU-PF led by President Robert Mugabe. In Zambia, for a long time, you had UNIP, headed by Kaunda until he was ousted. In Mozambique, you have Frelimo. You have the African National Congress in South Africa. Africa. Though, I mean, in South Africa, at least, there's a semblance of order and in Mozambique, but you see, it's very difficult to remove these parties that are entrenched, and you know, they have state resources and all that that we can talk about that they can use to their advantage, and there's no difference between the state and the ruling party.
Correct, Christopher, your take on that? Your general take on these type of parties, which are so dominant, they control almost everything. And there are many, my colleague here mentioned several in the southern Central Africa part, but we have similar ones in the eastern part also.
Yeah, we do, Douglas. But 3 points I want to make. Number one is that from a definitional point of view, I wouldn't actually say that we still have, with the exception of Eritrea, I wouldn't say that we still have what we would describe or define as single party rule. What we have is dominant political parties, which is to say political parties that control the rules of the political game. They are dominant in the in the economic sphere. They socially control society, and it is extremely difficult for the opposition to break in. Number two, I also want to say, as my colleague in the studio mentioned, with these types of political parties, for example, in Uganda, for example, in Rwanda, for example, in even in Burundi, it is extremely difficult for the opposition to defeat the ruling party, mainly for four reasons. First of all, like we mentioned, they dominate the political sphere, they dominate the economic sphere, they dominate the social sphere. And therefore, because they dominate even the economic sphere, it makes it very difficult for the opposition because the opposition is poor. Number two, the opposition therefore becomes divided because some of the members in the opposition, they are still looking for survival. They are still looking for bread and butter, and therefore they are interested in jobs with government. Number three, where you have such dominant political parties, sometimes, actually often, they use repressive methods. Because of the repressive methods, you find that prominent politicians, prominent opposition politicians, they eventually go to exile. And finally, during elections, they also manipulate the vote, which is to say there is rigging. And finally, is it possible to have democracy in such environment? I would say yes and no, because we have examples. If you look at Zambia, how Kaunda was defeated by Chiruba's MD. If you look at Kenya, how Kanu was defeated. If you look at Ghana, how Jerry Rawlings' successor, Arthur Mills, was defeated by John Kufuor. If you look at Senegal, Abdoulaye Wade beat the man who succeeded Sangoo. So yeah, it is possible, but this depends on a country-by-country basis. And if you look at the structure of African countries, I would say it depends on history, but especially on the structure of the economy. Because if you, in the structure of the economy, where the state cannot totally control the opposition, it is extremely difficult to defeat the opposition.
Yeah, but he mentions a lot of issues there. But mm-hmm. let's take some of them one by one. First of all, the opposition parties are deemed weak mm-hmm. or divided, not because they are weak or divided in naturally, but because the dominant party makes them weak, makes their leaders either run away or they are jailed or they are harassed. I know countries like Uganda, they keep arresting them, beating them up, mm-hmm. putting them in jail. If they don't have a strong spine, you have to run away. So I think it's deliberate on the part of some of these dominant parties to make sure there is no opposition. And where it is, it's just by show. They just handpick them and then they dub them the opposition. But in actual fact, they are subsets of the ruling party.
That's very true. I think it's a phenomenon that we have seen in most African countries. Mm-hmm. Which is rather worrying. And then if you talk about elections, they are not elections. It's what I refer to as rituals, electoralism. Mm. You know, you are just voting. The outcome is predetermined.
Yeah.
And you have seen, for example, interestingly, in Zimbabwe, where the main opposition party is boycotting the elections until their electoral reforms.
Mm-hmm.
But from nowhere, you have 13 or 15 other parties mushrooming, you don't even know, registered every day, you know. And then, so even if the opposition is saying, well, there's need for reforms, we are boycotting the elections, the ruling party still can come out and say, well, there is democracy. You know, there are 15 parties that participated in the elections, mm-hmm. And something like that. So at the end of the day, you have a deficiency when it comes to democracy.
Yeah, you see, Christopher, this is very interesting because take an instance of your country, Rwanda, where the opposition parties are among those who signed on to calling for amendment of the constitution to have the term limits removed. That is that unique among opposition parties in a natural setting?
Actually, in Rwanda's case, there are two groups of opposition political parties.
Yes.
There are opposition parties that have accepted to work with the dominant RPF
mm-hmm.
under what is called consensual form of democracy. These political parties accept to share power with the dominant party. That is why you find parties like PSD, PL, PPC, their leaders are also in government, heading different ministries, heading different institutions. So these ones are also calling for changing the constitution. But there are also other political parties that are not in government, that have not yet bought into the idea of consensual democracy, the idea that a party can win majority, but the political parties that win less than win 7 votes also get, actually 5%, also get seats in parliament and in government. And these political parties, for example, the Green Party, has done two things. One, it has petitioned the Supreme Court to make sure that Article 101 of the Constitution is not changed, which is to say that the term limit should stay. Secondly, they have also written to Parliament saying that changing Article 101 regarding the term limit is not acceptable, because somewhere in that article it says under no circumstance can a head of state hold the office for more than 2 terms.
Uh-huh.
Having said that, let me also say that if you look at how dominant political parties across the continent, some of the political parties have made to lose power, two things have happened. Number one, former members of the dominant party, individuals who were once entrenched, individuals who once held high office, and therefore have accumulated social capital and political capital, they get out of that political party. And if that party is also repressive, as they often are, many of the members get defeated, they get out and form the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
That is what happened in Kenya. That is what happened in Ghana. That is what happened in Senegal. And because these people are also very much entrenched, they are able to shake the dominant party.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's the second point I wanted to make, is that most of these dominant parties are also embedded with instruments that eventually make them collapse. And this is the idea of repression and building a network of patronage that is not based on ideology, but is based on a job. Once somebody loses a job, then he goes to the opposition. Therefore, I would say that instead of taking Africa as a single country where each country's democratic path is the same, it would be more advisable to look at case by case.
Yes, it's important, as he mentioned there, to look at country case by case, because not all dominant political parties in Africa are made of the same fabric.
That's true.
Some are very democratic, but some of them have merged with the state, that you can't differentiate between the party and the state. Take Uganda's NRM. Take there are many examples you can give on across the continent. But then, as far as democracy is concerned, he also mentions that Christopher mentions that the only way you can change anything in those dominant parties is by them swallowing themselves up, blowing up, and splitting, as you're seeing now in Uganda, former vice president joining the opposition, former prime minister was fired, trying to court the opposition. I mean, that's the only way you can have any change in those dominant groups.
That's true. I think
I think it's happening in Zimbabwe, where the former vice president
The former vice president was ousted in December, and there are rumors that she wants to join forces with the opposition to defeat Mr. Mugabe, who has been in power for the past 35 years since Zimbabwe got its independence on April 18, 1980. Mm. I think it's the same if you go to Zambia, you know. Some people who were in government, even in UNIP, the ones who formed some of these opposition parties to challenge the parties that were dominant, and they tend to do well. But I mean, he's also mentioning the issue of patronage. I think that is what you also see in most of these African political parties. And it has also weakened, democracy in most of these African countries, because if you are a member of the ruling party, obviously it comes with certain benefits, and you lose them once you leave. So you not only have a dominant political party, but you also end up just having a dominant individual, like in Zimbabwe in the case of Mugabe, where some members of the ruling ZANU-PF party, Mugabe is the son of God, is this, and
they take,
you know,
they instructions from
even
God,
equate him to Jesus.
Gentlemen, we're going to take a short break and we'll come back to continue our discussion of one party rule and democracy in Africa.
Hello, this is Sunday Shomari. Join me every Monday for your lighthearted show, Let's Talk. That's right, Monday at 17:30 UTC for interviews, great music, and a whole lot of laughter. Right here at the VOA Africa. Keep it locked, VOA Africa, don't miss.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is one-party rule and democracy in Africa. And our panelists are my colleague, Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service, and Dr. Christopher Kayumba of the School of Journalism at the National University of Rwanda. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9. Gentlemen, there are those who argue that some of these dominant, so-called dominant, I'm using the term one-party rule, one-party thing, not in the traditional sense of where it's where the constitution says there must be only one party.
Yeah,
I'm using it where it's in a way sort of it emerges as the dominant party, and then the position is almost rendered useless or unable to operate. So in some of these countries, the idea of competition, which is a crucial point of democracy, is sort of taken away. Because the leaders of these strong parties, dominant parties, they, as you mentioned earlier, Blessing, they are the visionary leader. They are the ones who can't go away if they go, the country. I mean, as if the country didn't exist without them. So where does this idea of dominance of the one party leave the idea of competition? Let me begin with Christopher there in Rwanda.
My friend Douglas, let me tell you, this thing called competition requires certain things in place.
Yes.
It requires four things. Number one, it requires resources.
You mean?
Most of these, it requires resources. It requires money, first of all.
Right.
The opposition is poor. They don't have money. Some of them do not even have money to feed their families. So, that is number one. If the opposition does not have money, therefore, on that level, competition becomes useless. Number two, organization structure. A country like Uganda, for example, has over 110 districts.
Mm-hmm.
In order for the opposition to be able to win, to compete effectively with the NRM, it needs to have manpower at each and every level of the Ugandan society. Therefore, each district is village level. That structure, it is through that kind of structure that they can win votes, or even defend votes when they have been voted for. But because they don't have resources, they don't have that organizational structure. Number three, like we said, dominant parties like the NRM are repressive. You see, just see what they have been doing to the former prime minister who used to be a secretary general of NRM, Honorable Amama Mbabazi, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He was his house was ransacked, you know. The other day, his daughter's office was attacked. So they use all these tactics, and therefore it makes competition difficult. Finally, the role of the military and the role of the police is extremely heavy. You cannot have political competition. You cannot have democratic competition when the coercive elements of the state are in favor of the dominant. And this is what is happening in countries like Uganda. So it is extremely difficult, therefore, to talk about competitive politics in most of these countries.
I see. Blessing. Christopher's point was well taken. But some people have argued that most of these dominant parties become dominant by merging with the state. He talks about having lack of money or having lack of money, organization structure, role of the military and police. All this is true, except that these dominant parties use government funds to run their parties.
That's very true. I think that is why you had the first in Nigeria where Muhammad Buhari came in as the first one to actually defeat a sitting president. So that has always been the problem, you know, the issue of resources. And then, and sadly for African democracy, that's when you end up having a lot of Western influence because most of these parties end up going to Washington,
to beg for
to London, some to Beijing. To look for funds. And sometimes it's also in the, as we have seen in Zimbabwe, it has become easy to discredit them because, you know, once these links are established with Washington, with London, you know, Mugabe will just say, these are Western puppets.
That's true.
You know, and then you keep on hammering that point to the extent that some people actually end up believing that that propaganda, and you weaken the opposition that way. But of course, they also come up with laws like, you know, if you're an opposition party, you cannot go and ask for money from Western
abroad.
Donors and stuff like that. But at the same time, the state is not giving you anything. You know, they say maybe you need about 5% of the vote in order to get money from these so-called political finance acts. But you know, at the end of the day, it's a question of resources.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have the resources, you cannot, you know, you cannot run in effective election.
Christopher, the other people say it in an ideal situation, it will be incumbent upon upon these dominant political parties, ruling parties, to help the opposition grow. If they claim they are weak, they don't have what. Why don't they help them grow? Do you see a situation where there's any dominant party that can help the opposition? Maybe set up structure, maybe, as you say, most of them lack infrastructure throughout the country.
I will make 2 points. Number one, as you say, in an ideal situation, therefore, you are speaking in the realm of theories.
Yes.
In theory, it is very good for a country, for the dominant party, to make sure that the environment is conducive such that the opposition can work freely and effectively. But since the beginning of time, politics has never been a game of favoring the opposition. If you read the writings of Machiavelli even advises lying that politicians can lie, this is in their basic interest. Therefore, somebody holding state power, it is not in the interest of anybody holding state power. It is not in the interest of any political party controlling state power to help the opposition to take away that power. It has never happened anywhere. It will never happen anywhere, whether in Washington or in London or in Japan, or here in Africa. It has, because power does not work like that. Once you have power, you want to have more power. Number two, therefore, what dominant political parties, strongmen are normally pushed to make sure that the opposition gets what is called political space. And this happens when about three things happen. Number one, it is the economic crisis. If you have an economic crisis, if you have the youth are jobless, if you have the population agitated, like it happened in Zambia, like it happened in the early 80s to early 90s, that is when we had the second wave of democratization, when most African countries were facing economic crisis. Because that is when people get annoyed. Number two, it happens when the population is well educated, when you have a good, sizable middle class that is able to understand the issues and to stand the ground.
And in Africa,
although the middle class is growing, but literacy is still very high, and the middle class is still very low. Number last, the last point. It is when the dominant party has fractures, when it is divided. For example, what is happening in NRM? if you see people who have been getting out of NRM, you started from Kizavetiye, then the former army commander Mugisha Muntu. Now you have a former confidant of Museveni, Amama Mbabazi, then you have vice president. When is that start happening? That is what happened to the Moi of Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
When people started, like Mwai Kibaki started going away, these people are wealthy, they have a lot of money, they have social capital. You cannot uproot them from their villages because they have resources and they are deeply embedded. Therefore, there is no political party that I'm aware of that has ever helped the opposition to take power from them. That is not how politics works.
I see. And exactly, that's the point of the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
All he mentioned there is very true. And the prerequisites for this happening, having a well-educated system, first of all, the dominant parties make sure that the infrastructure goes down. They don't improve education because they have the power. They outspend money on patronage. But what actually does happen is the parties sort of get frictions within themselves and split up, and either there's a mass movement of people who come up and demand change. So, in other words, you have to wait a long time for people to get annoyed enough to cause change.
That's very true. I think that's the trend that we are seeing in most African countries. I mean, talk about the so-called Arab Spring.
Yes.
You know, we see that, you know, because of the absence of democracy, people one day will just wake up and say, enough is enough. And, you know, like he correctly pointed out, the power corrupts and the absolute power corrupts. Absolutely.
Right.
That's what we are seeing. So the dominant parties cannot negotiate themselves out of power. It will be utopian. You can't expect them to behave like that, you know. I mean, basically, if you want to include the opposition in the equation, it's like you have two lions, the goat, you know, voting for who is for dinner.
That's
what
right.
happens, you know. The goat will never win such an argument. So at the end of the day...
So, Christopher, in the last 10 seconds, because you see the idea of alternative views from the opposition should be abandoned in this most of these dominant parties, in about 10 seconds.
You say that I didn't hear the question properly.
The idea of having an opposition that has alternative ideas of ruling, of governing, so that one is always one man, one party's ideas, one vision that should be pursued, is being pursued. Therefore, that can't be quite democratic.
No, that cannot be democratic. I think if you're going to be democratic, especially in our country, things have to happen. For me, actually, one of the biggest challenges, you find that the presidency has extremely too much power. So that has to be reduced and make sure that power is shared among institutions. And finally, if you want to make sure that democracy unfolds properly on the African continent, we have to understand that the African people, they are more consensual. Therefore, this winner takes all type of democracy. I don't think it's ideal for Africa.
I see.
What is ideal for Africa? It is consensual power sharing between different political parties.
Okay.
Where a political party, even the smallest that wins, for example, 2% of the total vote, can get into power.
All right. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, Christopher. This is all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I think it's a topic to discuss further on next time. I would like to thank our panel, though, my colleague here, Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service, and Dr. Christopher Kayumba of the School of Journalism at the University of Rwanda. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Douglas.
You're welcome. Our producer tonight was Jackson Mvunganya, and the engineer tonight was Martin Cassius. We'll be back next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. And in case you missed any part of this, just go to our website and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable and you'll find it there. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.